Ready.
Set.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of The Geek Whispers. I'm Amy Lewis.
I'm Matt Brender.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And we are here on the show floor, actually, at NetApp Insight. And thanks very much to the awesome folks at NetApp for giving us a meeting room to block out a little bit of the ambient noise. And we have managed to procure a NetAppian. Is that how you say it, Nick? We've got Nick Howell here.
Hi, guys. I'm a NetApper.
Okay,
I guess
there we
is
go.
What you NetApper. Would say. Apostrophe ER.
Like,
yeah.
Okay.
NetAppian. I'm not there, but I'm remote, but I believe the NetApp people would call themselves NetAppians.
I know. I was like, is it ape?
No, I don't think we'd appreciate the ape.
I don't think so either. So before we go too far afield, which is likely, we're actually talking about a really interesting topic today of something we've led into with other podcasts before about competing circles of interest. If you have multiple tribes that you ascribe to, and particularly when you come to an event and your time is precious and you've got a lot of people to see, a lot to do, how do you make choices between those different tribes? How do you fulfill all those responsibilities? So good problem to have, but definitely something you have to work through. So Nick, you kind of brought us this topic. Do you want to cue us up a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started as a customer. I started in the larger community space, and it kind of evolved into this. As I came into a role at NetApp, it evolved into this place where I was more of a spokesperson, bullhorn, marketing messenger sort of person for NetApp. So a lot of the blogging and stuff that I would do would be for that. But I still maintained my roots in the community. My bigger roots, I still hung out with a lot of guys. There's a running joke that I've got more friends at EMC than I do at NetApp. People rib me about that a lot. Which, if you watch my Facebook feed or my Twitter feed, you might draw to that conclusion. But
well, we're in Vegas. We've got to start an over-under if you're going to join EMC Elect this year.
Another running joke is that I know EMC gear a little bit better than some EMC folks, so should I sign up for EMC Elect?
That's a podcast for another day.
That's another show. But no, the getting back to the point here is that as an internal person, you go to all of these shows with a team of people, with an events team, with a set of subject matter experts, with people that are going to be running the demos and the labs. And at night, after the show floor closes, there's a clock out that happens, and everybody starts making dinner plans. Mm-hmm. And they'll all go to the same place, and they all sit around, and they do the same thing. But there are those of us that like to prance and go to the communities, right? Parties.
Meaning that rather than stay with your vendor, or rather than dance with those who brung you, as
right.
Troyer likes to say, in some ways, you part of your job responsibility or just personal passion means that you want to go out and meet folks you don't work with all the time or that you work with in other ways.
Yeah, I take it absolutely on board personally to make myself not only visible but interacting with everybody else that's outside of the team. Because there's no, in my mind, it doesn't make a lot of sense to hang out with the people at a show that you see and interact with on a daily basis. But when you've got this unique opportunity to be at a show and interact with people, other parts of the greater community or these different tribes, that's my motivation, is that I've got 3 to 4 days max to hang out with these guys, possibly only once a year. And so, yes, I'm going to skip dinner with you to go hang out here. And coming back to it, it's... there's a little bit of peer pressure that comes into that. Oh, you don't want to hang out with us, or et cetera, right?
Well, and I want to put a pause on that one. I think that's a great problem statement, and sort of throw it to Matt, because it just struck me that coming from...
There isn't a metric for this.
That all of us came from larger vendors, but Matt, with you now at a smaller company, you're maybe, sometimes you're going to be one or two of the total group that came.
Right.
So it wouldn't be the same as a swarm of 10 or 12 of us all going to dinner together. How has that changed for you when your tribe of interest is smaller, because those who brung you might be you and the other person setting up the booth?
No, I really resonate with Nick's point of whether you put effort into a broader community or you try to continue to build a bond with those that you work with. There is such importance to each, right? But to get to your point, Amy, at a smaller company like Infinio, I'm one of four people here out of, there's four people in the marketing department. So, so I'm one of few, and still there is that sort of instinct that at a show, you clock out at the end of the day, and now I get to do what I want, which often leads to people spending time together with those that they work with every day and going and having shared experiences in the craziness that is Las Vegas. So I know my coworkers went out to dinner last night, and I actually, I had that awkward moment of saying, I'd love to do that, but I don't think I should. I'm going to go to a NetApp community event because I don't know these people and I would like to. And it's, there's kind of two angles of that. Like, I've got to make sure I don't seem like I'm holier than thou, being like, you're doing it wrong.
Bingo.
And then the other thing is that I also don't want to be seen as the flaky person that doesn't spend time with coworkers and will be kind of on the outside for the rest of the year because the one time we're all together, I didn't spend enough time with them. So I feel the exact same pressure that Nick is mentioning, because I think it scales. Like, whether you're on a large or small team, there is this sort of social dynamic you have to navigate. And I think it's something we haven't addressed here.
Well, you nailed something specifically that I want to go back to, and that's the holier than thou, or I'll put in quotes, air quotes here, you're too good to hang out with the team. Mm-hmm. And it's, we had a, my team and I had a very come to Jesus moment in San Francisco this year at VMworld, where, you know, I've, a lot of people know that I've moved back to Los Angeles. I'm kind of remote now. I'm not with the team every day on and off, but we still interact via WebEx and calls, and we're still very much in touch with each other. But there was a, I learned that there had been this impression that Nick's too good for the team. And I had to really sit them all down and just go, look, guys, this is a brotherhood. Unit, core, God, country. And, you know, to go back to a military reference, the brotherhood comes first. And if you guys are feeling slighted in any way, that's misplaced. And let's correct that. So if I set any kind of guidance around that, it's just have that conversation with teammates.
Yeah, hey, Nick, that... You ruined it for me now, because, you know, obviously all the geek whisperers were going to come down on the side of go out, right? And I tell a story that I've told on this podcast before, but I'll tell it again. Of a colleague of ours who works for a big company and who's active in the community, and he was expressing to me his struggles with his coworkers, similar reason, but they're the scenario was they all said, hey, we really want to get involved with this community stuff. We really, you know, how do you network like that? How do you really do all this? You have superpowers. We want those superpowers too. How do we do it? And then it came, you know, and of course the end of the story is you come to the end of the day and he's like, okay, now we go out for the second half of our day where we're going to go socialize, and you're going to meet, I'll introduce you to all these people. And they're like, I'm too tired. I got to go. Got to go back to the hotel and you know, watch, catch up on, you know, Home Improvement or whatever they're watching. So, you know, so that's my canonical story that I tell of how, you know, people have to go out and play their, you know, go out and socialize and the geek equivalent of the golf game. But now you've just ruined it, Nick, because you said, well, on the other flip side, you can't be holier than thou. So that I was all set to be holier than thou, and now you've just deflated me.
John, I was going to say the same thing. I even have a slide that says number one rule is don't sit at dinner with everybody you work with every day. Like, yeah. Number one rule is to be uncomfortable. So I'm going to go ahead and take that risk of being holier than thou, because I just had a real direct conversation with the team. I said, I do not want you to tweet out a picture of everybody all from the same place that you spent all your time together in a foreign location having a great dinner together and think that constitutes a successful tweet.
Wow. That's a great, for those that are running teams that you want to move from wherever you are today to an influence marketing model tomorrow, that is actionable advice right there that I think people should keep in mind. Like, that's a great way of making the point. So I think it's fair to be a little bit certain about that, because we're certain that it works. Like, you do have to make the effort to introduce yourself to people that don't know you yet, even though you know half the room, or even though your coworkers are in a corner and you'd love to hang out with them. It's kind of the part of the job we signed up for that's harder to communicate to others.
I want to know from Nick how the story ended. Did you come to a joint understanding with your coworkers about what you were doing and versus the, you know, the team building stuff?
We need some practical tips, because
okay,
John's
sure.
Obviously holier than thou. I'm just mean and say don't do that.
Well,
what's the middle ground?
I definitely want to address that. The one thing I want to call up back to what you were just saying, John, though, is that we have to respect, as unicorns, we have to respect that there are people that do not want to be unicorns. They don't have any interest in blogging. They don't have a Twitter account. They probably have one but because somebody said they had to. But there are those kinds of people, and we have to respect that. There are people that live 8 to 5. They are paid to do a job, and that job does not oftentimes include social activities and community, such as what we...
And it's not that they don't do it well. We're certainly not saying that. But
they don't do it because they don't feel they have to, or they don't see any benefit in doing it. And I guess that's part of this podcast, right, is to educate people as a whole on community and social media stuff. So part of the thing that I had to recognize, especially over the last couple of years and coming to a vendor, is that not everybody's like me. Not everybody wants to immediately, as soon as the show floor closes, go record a podcast and then sit in my room and edit it so that I can upload it while everybody else goes and drinks at the hotel bar or goes out to dinner or what other various activities. Or gets a good night's sleep.
What is the sleep you speak of?
Right. It's also not their job.
True.
And frankly, it's not part of mine either. If you look at the job description of a tech marketing engineer, nowhere does it say you have to tweet X times a day, or you have to write X blog posts per month, or you have to record a podcast. I'm not graded on any of that stuff. I'm not given any, you know, there's the passive kudos and stuff that you get, the handshakes, but when it comes to annual review time, none of that stuff really comes into play.
Well, maybe let's flip this a little bit and think about, two things to really talk about. One, some tips for how we can change our own behavior and to make sure that we're making the right impression all the way around. And two, anything you've got from your personal experience about, in some ways, making that harder choice, making that complicated choice, what it's done for your career. Because I know we talk about it to some extent, but I think the more kind of positive examples that we put out there, the more people can say, maybe I will try that way. Maybe just a little bit. I'll dip my toe in. So I'd love to hear, I know that's a lot, and we'll talk through it, but
yeah,
tips and...
Starting off the tips, I'd really like to go back to the specific example you brought up, Nick. You said you sat down with your coworkers and like had kind of a reverse intervention on like what it meant for you to do these things and how you respect them still. I think a lot of people don't even know where to start to have that conversation.
Sure.
So can you walk me through that a little?
Absolutely. So of course we're all friends with our coworkers on Facebook and they follow our Twitter feeds, and it has more to do with being remote than anything.
Mm, sure.
So that's all they see of you outside of conference calls and WebExes. So if they see that Nick has a photography hobby and he's taking pictures of either models for friend with fashion,
babies?
Right?
Yeah.
So pictures of cars, or I'm in a certain place, or that's how, it's interesting that that's how they followed me and they developed this impression of what I was doing out in LA.
Nick's just out. The caricature in some ways instead
the
of the person.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what I had to do was squash this impression of I'm just out in LA screwing around, not actually, you know, recording a podcast every week, writing a 200-page paper, building a hands-on lab for VMware, for VMworld, all those things that were going on from spring to now.
Yeah.
All those things have been going on. They are low touch point, heads down kind of work stuff. So if you gauging an individual based on what's in their Facebook feed, that's mostly what I'm doing on Saturday and Sunday on the weekends, is fun to check out kind of stuff.
You've ruined everything.
I know.
Now.
Ultimately, it's what I got judged on, and that was the misinterpretation. That was what had to be corrected.
And I really want to jump into that because I think there's an interesting thing. We've always talked about all the positive things that social media can do for your career, but that's an interesting point that it may be, if you've got a team environment where people are close and they follow and some of this impression, the abstraction that social media does cause, that we lose, you know, the human touch, it may be important to check in with your team because you may have this, it may look like you're living this glamorous, like you said, you know, your tire never goes flat, nothing ever goes, you know, everything's happy, joy, and glamorous, as opposed to like, I'm just working. I mean, people rarely, you know, Facebook picture of me, here's me just working.
The one other thing that came out of it as an action item was I'm probably going to start traveling to RTP in Sunnyvale from LA. So to get that FaceTime so if we're talking about tips of how to modify behavior, it's not just theirs, it's mine as well. So if I've walked away from this with anything, it's that not only is it correcting an impression, but it's modifying my own behavior to make sure that impression is solid. Make sure that I'm engaged with them as the part of the team.
Yeah.
In person, is you cannot change that. And I know I'm hypocritical in a sense that I move out and back to Los Angeles, but there's no replacement for the water cooler hallway talks. There's no replacement for that kind of FaceTime.
Now, I would like to add one tip, though, since we're getting tactical. Like, there's something about the way I communicate through social media that's very intentional to that point, that I'm slightly worried about, you know, seeing, like, I'm the person that gets to hang out at all these conferences, have a blast, drink a beer with all these awesome people, and that's all
I do.
And
then build a cat condo.
Cat condos aside, yes, yeah. No, but I wanted to make sure to show more. That's why you'll see a lot of intentional tweets from me or updates on Facebook, so that people see that, like, this is the project that I'm focused on this week. Here's, like, and I'll say it in a way that's, like, open and communicative, like, hey, I'm building this workload generator. It's going to take a lot of time building out the lab. Any tips or tricks for people, or just kind of just say that and leave it out there, just so people see more than just my cat tweets and, like, where I go out to dinner with my girlfriend. Like, give them a better rounded view, because I think it's important to keep in mind that, like, people will start oversimplifying what you do if that's all they see.
I do eat salad on occasion, not just bacon, for the record.
And biscotti.
And, well, okay, I do really like biscotti.
John, anything on your end that's coming to mind?
Absolutely. I love that we have elucidated. You've got some responsibilities along with your rights here as a blogger and as a community member, and as you're accelerating, you know that it helps you doing your job, and you know, it helps your career too, but it also helps you do your job for your current employer better. But I'm glad we pulled out that it's also your coworkers and boss have to know what the hell you're doing. I actually have another topic. Which is another tip, which is one thing that I've seen a lot more of these days, and where these days is somehow now that travel is pretty expensive and people are pretty conscious of travel budgets, even in the IT industry where things are going pretty well, is that I've seen a lot of pre-sales events or sales kickoffs around other conferences. And so I think this is not something that you as an individual can do, but it's something that a company can do institutionally, which is double team the, you know, get two uses out of the travel budget and build in some team building or some operational activity around a show. So the day before a show starts, build in some team meetings because everyone's there. And people do it opportunistically. Oh, all the European marketing managers are here, so we might as well meet or whatever. That's the kind of thing that I've seen. But I've also seen a lot more sales kickoffs, so people doing that at a bigger scale. And or I've seen also some mini conferences at the end of other conferences. So I'd encourage people to do that. And then that takes some of the stress off having to do team building for remote workers plus schmoozing, which is, you know, kind of part of your gig. If you're at a show, you know, it avoids mixing the streams a little bit.
Yeah, the one caveat I would throw back at you, John, is that a lot of time those team building exercises are dinners that can go from 2 to 4 hours. You lose an entire night of the 3 to 4 nights that you have, that maybe that one time per year. But I love the idea of morphing, maybe staying an extra couple of days to turn it into a team building event at the end of, or at the tail end of something like NetApp Insight. Stay for a couple extra days in Vegas, have some fun, do something as a team.
Celebrate a great show. And
right.
Do
go drive race cars or shoot automatic weapons in the desert or whatever you want to do that you can do. There's even, you can drive heavy equipment in Vegas, I found out. There's an empty lot. And I think that's it's so on my list.
Yeah, that's funny. Of course, unfortunately, Nick, a lot of times it's not like go shoot guns or drive heavy equipment. It's let's go work on the Q4 budget.
Right. And, you know, code of conduct issues come into play as well. So,
But I was going to say exactly to your point, John, and Nick, actually you both got there before I did, but the caveat would be the utopia for me would be if we can get our management teams to understand a little bit of the rhythm and the schedule of the show so that they don't put the unicorn activities on top of each other, so that you don't have to, you know, wear your horn to a nub trying to get
it excites me to see Matt here, who's big in the community. It excites me to see Amy here, big in the community. I mean, typically Insight has been, this is the first year we're doing customers, or allowing customers to come, and we're exposing it and morphed it into this real trade show now, whereas typically it was just essentially a sales sort of thing where we taught the field how to do stuff. Mm-hmm. That was what Insight typically was.
So there would be more, and especially in this case, it's a great example of where you've got team building opportunity in previous years, and all of a sudden you've got the public here, and so it changes everything.
Yeah, I actually, funny story, I ran into two of the guys that I went to class with back in 2007 for NetApp Data ONTAP Fundamentals, like the 101 course for NetApp. They're still here, they're customers, and it was an amazing moment just to see the guys and still have that connection. So if it does anything, it continuing to be public, continuing to be part of the community, even above and beyond what my job title, what my job description dictates that I do, it's extremely rewarding for me individually.
Okay, and that's where I was going to go next. Is like, so we've got a couple of very good practical tips about how to resolve some of those conflicts. And again, we got to pull from all sides. So we need our managers, we need our event planners, we need individuals to kind of look at the schedule and think about the different competing needs and understand that they have importance and that one can't always trump the other. So and in that case, I think we always try to build the case for why do that thing extra above and beyond? And what are some of the conversations you've had as you both forge your own career path, as you encourage people on your team to maybe understand you a little better, to add that complexity and not just the social media abstraction that is Nick. Talk to us about any kind of, because you're a podcaster. I mean, you have a lot of content production. You do a lot of stuff. So what keeps you going? And what kind of rewards have you seen?
I mean, he gets to know us, Amy.
I'm sitting here on the Geek Whisperers podcast, right? That's one big thing.
No, humility.
if I go back to 2006, 2007, I have a familiar story that you guys have heard before. I was a customer. I was VMware was still fairly new, really taking hold. I started writing notes for myself, and I was like, maybe somebody else will read this. I hear there's this blogging thing. So I go and start putting it into a blog, and you know, fast forward a few years later, Vaughn discovered me. I give him all the credit in the world. Started reading my stuff, loved what I was writing about, loved that I was a NetApp, kind of a natural, organic NetApp evangelist. Introduced me to a few people at NetApp, and fast forwarded the track to get me on board, and I've never looked back. As far as transitioning from that to, air quotes again, data center dude, as we all know him today, it's more of personal geek interest in making sure that people understand the technology properly, because I don't like rumor and hearsay and FUD, I guess is the word that we want to use there. So I take it personally when people explain things the wrong way and try to correct that via any means, whether it's at a show, whether it's on a podcast, or whether it's through the blog, any of those type of venues.
And I love the term you use, the organic evangelist. What a cool concept. And I think for folks out there who may not be on the vendor side and be interested, I think it really speaks to that story. I know we hear it a lot, but you can't say it enough. Of if you're interested in furthering your career and opening up different possibilities, and the, you know, not to say any one path is correct for anybody, but if you really want to give yourself possibility, even for visibility within your own company, if that's what you're looking for, then I think that sort of organic activity is really important. What a great story. You keep working at it, somebody notices you, you get pulled into other, better, bigger things.
Yeah, and you can see that companies are absolutely proponents of it and want more of it. That's why every tier one company or large enterprise tech company, and honestly anything developer centric, they all have these, to go with the organic theme, they all have walled gardens. Everyone's making a nice little garden for you to plant your seed and continue to grow. So look at ways of becoming, you know, EMC elect, NetApp A-Team, Cisco Champion, VMware vExpert, etc. There are a lot of opportunities that people are looking to unleash your talent and third-party view. So that's great advice. But I'd love to get us back on track on navigating the social dynamic of teams and in-person at events and the opportunities that you have for community. I'm going to ask you a tough question, Nick.
Go.
What would make you turn down a community event for an internal event?
We've got a spotlight shining on him right now.
I don't know that there's any one thing, to be honest. An opportunity to have some face time with a senior level member of management would do it, because that's rare. The opportunity to have their ear for half an hour or an hour, or however long it takes.
Sure.
I find that what I'm learning to do is balance better. So I'm pre-scheduling. I know before I go to VMworld that Tuesday night is party night. So I make sure that I don't, not VMworld party, but vendor party night, I should say. I know not to get involved with anything regarding the team on Tuesday night, because there's going to be at least five parties that I'm probably going to bounce around to. Same thing goes with a lot of other shows. I knew that last night we were having our huge bash on the MGM pool deck for a year at Insight. Made sure that there wasn't that much other stuff going on. So I think it's a matter of you have to proactively schedule. If it comes down to a decision, I'm always probably going to lean towards community because I can always have that conversation with the internal people at another time. I can call them on Monday when we get back from the show. I have their phone extension, you know. The people that are at the shows at that time, I am always going to lean towards that to take advantage of that time with them.
And I think it's, again, as we think about all our individual responsibility, before we get angry with people who don't know the rhythm of the community events, we all know, let's use VMware as an example, because they do a great job at VMworld of posting the community events. We all know about the community events link that we can go out and look. And so we know what the official, the unofficial, the everything in between. And in the community, it's just a rhythm we understand. But there is no reason that our events teams, our marketing teams, our management knows this. Like, I started to expose that link to them this year as a means of, like, here's the structure. And they bring me in to help figure out what night we should do what on, because I've got a little more of a pulse because I'm following it. I want to go to these things. And for my own schedule's sake, I don't want to have to go to 8 things at the same time. So if we can schedule it so that none of us have to make all those hard choices, silly as it sounds, but this small procedural thing, don't assume people know what they don't know. It may not be that they devalue the community. They may simply not know that exists. So they're barreling along with a plan that's an awesome plan, but outside of this really important data point.
Sure. And instead of cursing them under your breath at the event, you could look a few weeks or a few months before and try to get to know the folks that are trying to plan these things and reach out to them, because they're looking for help too on trying to find out what's the right time for this event. And, you know, conflicts are bound to happen.
Yeah, I want to echo that. Going back to working with your company, and I guess this is mostly a vendor-centric perspective maybe. But let's say it's important to work with them and to understand the business objectives. There's two scenarios I'm thinking about. One is the scenario where you're at some sort of conference or event, and your company is putting on a party. You're putting on some sort of event. I think it's useful to go over with your team what the business objectives for that event are, because again, we're working, right? This is not just, we're not just there to sit around and gossip. We're actually working. So, and it's useful to have the help of an executive to go around and remind people to mingle, because you're supposed to be, let's say you're the host of an event and you have guests, and the goal is for the guests to A, have a good time, B, comfortable, and for you to get to know them better, because you can do business together in the future. And sometimes it does take a VP going around and poking people with a stick, going, breaking up coworkers' conversations and saying, you know, go talk to people. So that's a tip, you know, get aligned business objectives, get them, and make sure management knows, you know, what the heck is doing. The other one is related to that, which is, you know, you can also, so maybe this is one for Nick, given that this social media stuff is not officially part of your gig, but hopefully the podcast and the blogging that you do are valued by the company as a whole, or your management in general, or whatever. Is there an avenue here where you can talk to, make sure your management chain knows that, look, part of the value of what I'm doing is both getting guests and evangelizing and kind of doing the networking necessary to make these media properties more viable?
Yes and no, and I have to be delicate with this one. I take it as my own personal responsibility to introduce myself to the powers that be. To your first point, yes, my manager does know and appreciate what I do. Teammates know and appreciate what I do. And I believe one level up above my manager knows about the podcast and about the blogging efforts, etc. Above and beyond that, I'm not sure. I doubt a lot of them know who I am, to be fair. There's a few, there's a select few, but to your second point, I've taken it on board personally to go to the directors of PR, the heads of marketing. I just met Richie Jennings from CIO.com this week, after following him for years and stuff. So, and I've made some contacts over there for our network. So I take it on board as a personal responsibility, because I want to continue to build this brand, I guess is the best word for it, around Data Center Dude, evangelizing for NetApp, and continuing just to be a voice out there. So, it's on me to do that, in my opinion.
So a couple things there. Great points all around. I think that one of the things that as unicorns, as technical folks, we forget, and the Geek Whisperers have taught me this, is you've got to punch up sometimes. So going up to the executive level and making a case for what you do. And the other thing is, and again, this is Troyer 101, give it a name, give it a name. And the whole concept of influence marketing came around because social media had gotten a little bit of that negative, fluffy, take a picture of your breakfast brand. Influence marketing, you can talk about it without blushing. And I would encourage people to think about what you're doing. Stop apologizing for it, because you truly are networking in a different way. The social media channels are a virtual golf course in so many ways. There's 1,000 ways you can spin it. Put your marketing hat on and don't blush. Like, absolutely defend what you're doing. Show it with results. Nick's got a lot of content, like you said. So there's output. He's measurable. He can pass those measurements up. Just don't apologize. I think too often we've done this. It's like, oh, I want to go have a beer with my friends. It's not that. It is part of an ongoing relationship building thing that no one in pure sales would blush over. They'd say, I'm going to the golf course, and by gosh, that's exactly the right thing I should be doing. Everybody would clap them on the back for doing it. So this is the geek's version of that, and we should frame it in a way that it is a little more familiar to the powers that be, and really again, be strong, own it.
I think to end this on a positive note, one of the things that has come out of it is that I have a couple of new guys that are on the podcast. They see what's going on. I'm trying to shepherd the guys into the community. And I don't know if it's fear or if it's fear of the unknown, I guess is the best way to, what they don't know what to expect. So I'm trying to help set those expectations, expose the benefits of being visible externally, not only for them, but just being a body that shows up with a NetApp shirt on makes NetApp visible in the community, and that has exponential kind of benefits.
Implications. I love that. If you can't save everybody in some ways, take one person. Maybe that's the tactical tip. I've tried that. Find one person who's willing to take a chance and say, come on, go with me to this party. You can leave in 30 minutes.
Trust me, I'll hold your hand. Right. I'll show you how to navigate
the people scene. Listening to this podcast who are in part of the community, it's incumbent upon you to welcome new faces into the group. So when you see a new face, grab them and say hello.
Absolutely.
Amen to that.
So we're about to lose our space. The exciting part of doing these sorts of podcasts at a show is your time in a quiet room ends. So first, I really want to thank you, Nick, for coming on and bringing this topic.
Thank you for having me.
So thanks for hosting us here at NetApp Insight. And we'd love to hear. So we've talked a lot about your content. Tell us where we can find you.
The hub of all of it is datacenterdude.com. At DataCenterDude on Twitter, and you can find all of the NetApp Communities podcast episodes either on datacenterdude.com or on the iTunes Store or on Stitcher.
And so definitely check out Nick's work. He's got some really great stuff, and we're thrilled that you're here with us. So, and of course, if you like us, we have feelings too. So please, please give us a thumbs up, some stars, tell a friend about it, bring a unicorn along. You can find us at Geek Whispers. I won't try to do the underscore and the dash. You know the difference. And that's it. So we'll see you next time here on the Geek Whisperers.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as Jay Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
Okay, we've got to run. John, we're about to get thrown out.
Okay.